the late July 3rd news dump by the NFL. That's a new level of bury this news.
Yeah, and there was also other news that day of other guys who had been suspended.
Suspensions.
And so I thought maybe it would come out with those.
Special treatment.
No.
They gave this special treatment.
Edelman got prime time.
He did. This is what I believe about Julian Edelman's suspension. We've spent a lot of time talking about this since it happened. I believe that his representatives, his agent, his high-powered attorney that he hired, that he retained specifically for this matter, they did an excellent job in trying to muddy the waters, create doubt, have what I believe to be a significant portion of, let's say, the patriot-loving public, that portion of the public, that they were to reach the conclusion that somehow the league screwed over Julian Edelman.
Right.
That somehow he was a victim of the NFL, because you've already got a rabid fan base that is ready to believe that. They're on call, ready to believe that the league is out for the Patriots, and therefore they would be out for Julian Edelman. I don't believe them. I don't buy any of their crap. They did it.
The fans' crap or the NFL's crap?
Edelman's crap.
Edelman's crap. Okay.
His lawyers, his reps, everything that they've done here since this started, they've done it to paint him, and they've done it to create the doubt that I think now exists about his suspension. This has annoyed me. This has legitimately annoyed me that people believe that Edelman had some mystery substance that the NFL never identified and never came to a conclusion on, and then they just railroaded him and screwed him and gave him four games. All right, so Burt Breer was the first one to put out there that Edelman had, this is the wording, an initially unrecognizable substance.
Right.
That was found in his system. Red herring is what that is. And by the way, the only people saying this will be Edelman's camp, because the NFL will not say anything, leak anything, because the confidentiality rules around PED testing in the league are pretty strong.
Yeah, well, the appeal did get out pretty quickly. You know, appeals aren't supposed to be out when that was released. Those are supposed to be confidential until the appeal's heard, and we knew about this months ago.
Although it's not confidential to the player and his people, and they can tell whoever they want.
They could have. That's true. I don't see why they would, but why would Edelman do that? Why would he tell people, yeah, I'm getting banged for four games?
But at that
PEDs?
Point, it's over. They're not going to say that it's an initially unrecognizable substance. That didn't come from the league. It came from Edelman. I mean, that one's obvious. And although it might be true that initially it wasn't recognizable, it certainly doesn't mean the substance didn't trigger a positive test.
Right.
He tested positive. He went in, gave his samples, multiple samples. It came back as a positive test. And so since this all started, I have this track record of reading the documents on all of the Patriots cheating scandals. The Wells Report.
Sounds like a good time.
The Wells Report in context.
Good time, yeah.
I mean, wow. There's just so much to read, including the 50 or so pages of the NFL's PED policy, which says, under Section 1, this is the Prohibited Substances Department of the policy. They have anabolic agents, and then they also have masking agents, which is Section 2. There's a stipulation at the bottom of both lists. It reads, and other substances with a similar chemical structure and similar biological effects.
Right.
Which means you can have a similar substance to what is already on the list. There's 71 anabolic agents. You can have one where you blend two of them together, you get a positive test, and they say, oh, what do we have here?
Doesn't have a name, right?
They might have given it a name after this. They may call it Edelman. You tested positive for Edelman. So what we do know is he got a four-game suspension, which means that is an anabolic agent.
Right.
It would have been two games for the masking agent. It would have been no games at all if it were a stimulant, because during the offseason, those are not considered PEDs. And these are the facts of this. And the NFL players give two samples when they are tested. There's an A sample. There's a B sample. When they test the A sample and it comes up positive, you know what they do? They notify the player and say, call us. Because they don't then test the B sample right away.
Okay.
They want to offer them independent toxicologists. They want to offer them the ability to have someone who's from the outside come in and witness the testing of the B sample. They have all these extra checks and balances in this policy. So it means he gave two samples. They both were positive for one of the 71 or something similar anabolic agents.
Yeah. And you notice also, Beadle, Edelman never denied this. He never denied taking anything.
Of course not.
And also, he never claims that the sample was tampered with. All of his problems and beefs were with the test results, which is basically, as Ben Volen put it in the Globe yesterday, paperwork. Like, the sample was done. The test results were in. There's not, unless someone used whiteout and whited out, you know, negative and wrote in positive.
Well, that was the second red herring in all of this, was the paperwork. And then you start leaking that out. Again, the word sample was never reported, but when you have it leaked out through the media, through your media back channels, that there were paperwork and results issues, and you start using phrases like chain of custody.
Yeah.
Or the name Richard Sherman starts getting thrown around from 2012. All of a sudden, that morphs into the urine sample. No, there was it was never contested by Edelman. In fact, you just mentioned it, that, you know, after the fact now, it was reported by Volman, it was reported by Breer. You go back to Dan Graziano's report of ESPN last month. That report in June read, Edelman's appeal is arguing that the league mishandled the documentation and delivery of his test results, the paperwork, the documents, not the sample, which there are two of, and are closely monitored and controlled. He never even contested that. He never contested there was an issue with the sample. He never contested that it was an unknown substance. He did neither of those things.
He was mad that it wasn't in a manila folder or something. Like, I mean, I don't even know exactly what procedural problems would arise from the test results, unless they weren't stapled properly, or else there wasn't a three-hole punch, or some sort of weird office busybody problem like that you just can't, that I couldn't even imagine. And with all the recaps I read about it, no one really knew exactly what they were going for with the results, just that it was procedural. And I think you're right. That's what sort of gets people thinking about Richard Sherman. Oh, the procedure was wrong there. Braun, the procedure was off. But those were sample-based procedure problems. The sample was tampered with.
So people seem to think that somehow he's getting screwed by the league. He's not. He's not. I know that you don't like it. We all like Julian Edelman. Who doesn't like that guy?
Sure.
Who doesn't root for that player? But don't make it into something that it was not. And I think that his camp has done a really good job of sort of floating it out there that it was something that was unknown, that there were issues in the handling of the case, that somehow the league did wrong. And I just think you shouldn't buy it. I think it's all bullcrap. I think it's lies. I think it's what every single user of PEDs, when they get caught, it's what they do. I think he's got a better plan than most. He did it without ever actually saying any of these things. He's got this high-powered attorney who clearly knows what he's doing. In the eye of the public, they have created some doubt. They have muddied the waters. And people now genuinely believe, because they haven't closely followed what was in this story, to think that somehow he's a victim of the NFL again.
Right.
And I just think that's bull crap. Don't buy that. Don't buy it at all.
It's tough to think that, except for two things. Number one, the leak of the appeal, which we don't know if it was the NFL or not. Could have been Edelman, although I don't know why. Could have been Guerrero, I guess. Guerrero did have that statement out awfully quick, didn't he?
Although the appeal decision comes down within 3 days of the hearing.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that the fact that there was an appeal at all, that he was going to be appealing in the first place, that got leaked and shouldn't have.
Oh, right. Right,
so that if that was the NFL, if they were involved in that, then you can say, okay, they screwed him over a little bit there. And also the differing timing of the announcement, a 7 o'clock dump like that, I don't know, maybe that's better for him if you think about it.
It is better for him.
Going right into it. But it was also, instead of throwing it in with a bunch of other names, you know, all right, here's your big shining moment, Julian. It's before a holiday, sure, but it's just you. Everybody else, we're all, you know, going to be in that same headline together, but now you get your own one at 7 o'clock. That seemed a little...
I think you're wrong about that. I'm going to talk more about that. We'll get to that. But also, just to recap, there were no issues with either of the samples, plural, A and B. There's two samples in these cases. The test was positive. He never argued that the substance was unknown. He argued that they made an error in paperwork. And there's actually no way for us to even know if that's true. If there was an actual error in the paperwork, that someone actually did even get that part of it wrong. There's this part in the policy called Appendix G. They give you a boatload of paperwork when you do test positive. And the rules on that are not publicly known as to what some of that paperwork needs to be. But I can tell you that there's no way for us to know. And the arbitrator in this case is independently appointed. Very important part in all this. Independently, jointly appointed by the NFLPA and the NFL. For all the unfairness and nonsense in the NFL, the PED policy and the way they go about it is pretty fair. There's a lot of checks and balances in there. It has an independent administrator. Players have the rights to call in independent board-certified toxicologists. They use world-class labs. They use the one at UCLA. They use the one that's in Salt Lake City. When there's an appeal, you get a jointly appointed arbitrator. You don't get that for anything else in this league. Tom Brady, in his case, he didn't have a jointly appointed arbitrator. He got Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
When you have a PED one, they bring in someone from the outside, someone that has nothing to do with the league. So there are checks and balances, a pretty fair system, very thorough policy that the NFL has on this stuff. And Edelman and his people have done a good job of creating doubt and making things up and muddying the waters. That's what it feels like to me. You read these reports, I think they're in on all of them. And I think the league did him a solid with that news dump on the July 3rd, you know, late night one. Mike Hurley agrees with me. I want to get to his story. And a tweet from Tommy Curran. What's next for Edelman? We'll get to all of this coming up next. 617-779-0985. It's Bertrand and Arcan today. In the midday.
Very French-Canadian show today.
Yes, it is. Talking a little sports in the midday.
Hot takes.
I am Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Wrong song. Oh.
Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is the telephone number. Bertrand and Arcand on this 5th of July, the day after. I had some traffic on the way in this morning, so I know some people are working today.
Today?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was surprised.
You come up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, not as much traffic as a normal busy day, but I was surprised.
Interesting.
Good for America. Getting back to work today. Working off that hangover today.
Just like the forefathers intended.
It's exactly what they wanted.
Head down at the desk.
Yes.
A lot of coffee.
That is definitely the work ethic they were looking for.
A lot of trips to the bathroom.
So we're talking about Julian Edelman having his appeal upheld. He got the news dump on the 3rd of July, which is really, really special and new. I mean, that one is a new one. And I think that they did him a favor. In fact, Mike Hurley, Mr. Patriots pom-pom waiver himself, agrees. He wrote on CBS Boston, the NFL is no stranger to the old Friday news dump.
Right.
We all know about that one. That's a move that everybody knows. He says, but on Tuesday, they announced the suspension for Reuben Foster. That was for weapons and drugs, right? That's not even PEDs. That's something outside of PEDs.
Mm-hmm.
They did get Aaron Jones on a marijuana-related suspension earlier in the day. There was Rams lineman that got suspended a couple of games for violating the substance abuse policy. So you're talking about, you know, weed, substance abuse policy, someone who was brought up on a weapons charge and a misdemeanor and drug offense outside of the sport of football.
Right.
And then they kind of have that flurry of announcements, and then they hold on until after 7 p.m. on July 3rd to put out that Edelman's appeal was being denied on PEDs. As Mike Hurley writes, in the world of burying a story, that one may have set a new standard. He says, considering this matter involves a Patriots player, and considering many in New England believe the NFL loves sticking it to the Patriots, one might reasonably wonder why the NFL would want this story buried in the first place. After all, shaming a great Patriots player and dragging his name through the mud for as long as possible seems to be a preferred leisure activity of many of the suits at 345 Park Avenue, right? He says, well,
sure,
yes.
Mike. Sure.
He says, but look at this as a way to bury the story, because football is so concerned not about the violence of the weapons charges or the misdemeanor drug charges, more than anything else, they don't want their league being looked at as a PED league. They fear that. They don't like that. They would prefer that they don't have to have testing at all, which I completely agree with. I've always felt that way. The NFL doesn't like to have testing. Major League Baseball doesn't like having drug testing. They don't want those things. They don't want the backlash of that. They don't want the appearance of there being cheating or there being chemically enhanced guys who go out there and smash their heads together
right.
for 3 hours on a Sunday and end up concussed and end up with CTE and long-term health issues. They don't want that view. Oh, it's a roided-up league. They hate that.
Yeah.
They want to bury those stories. They want to bury PED violations. which is why they will never reveal what it is that these guys test positive for, which is why when they do test positive, you've got all these players saying, I took Adderall. It was for a stimulant.
Yeah.
It was Adderall. Oh, it's, you know, something I took that had nothing to do with cheating.
I had a big exam on Thursday.
Right. That's what it comes down to. Because the league doesn't like PED suspensions. They don't like suspending guys for PEDs. They don't enjoy that part of the process.
Do you believe that there's a, I don't know, I've heard Felger sort of describe it as a speed limit with PEDs, and
yes,
if you go way over the speed limit,
yes,
like you're allowed to go 55, that sort of thing, like you think that's true?
Yes.
Okay.
I think there is.
There's a tolerance for it.
To a degree, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as big of a tolerance as, here's what I do think. I think that the best, think about this. The league only gives you 2 games for a masking agent. They give you 4 games if you get caught with the actual drug.
Right.
Why would everyone then not take a masking agent? That would be my number one question.
Sure.
This is a league where they don't give you the same penalty. The masking agent is worth less. They're encouraging you to take the masking agent. That's what they're encouraging you to do with that. If you get caught with a masking agent, it's only 2 games, guys. So cover up whatever it is that you have in your system, and we'll give you less of a penalty. We will reward you if you come up positive on those tests as opposed to this one. Right?
I thought there was a chance that this whole thing was a masking agent, the settlement thing. I didn't know that about the 2 games as opposed to the 4 games. That's an important detail. I was thinking maybe since they couldn't identify it, that maybe it was some sort of new masking agent. That was like my first thought when I saw that it was a previously unknown substance. It didn't occur to me that maybe it was a different chemical makeup than some other similar steroid or something along those lines. But if it's only 2 games, then yeah, that pokes a hole in my theory, I suppose.
Right?
Yeah.
There's encouragement for that.
Mm.
Meanwhile, there's a tweet that was put out by Tommy Curran, which is important because Tommy Curran clearly has a close relationship with Julian Edelman,
right,
wrote the book with Julian Edelman. So I don't know if this is him speculating or it's informed speculation, but here's what his tweet said. With suspension upheld by arbitrator, Julian Edelman now faces decision to accepting or push on if he feels the arbitrator erred in overlooking procedural missteps. May not be over yet.
Yeah! All right!
Now, I think he's just sort of giving you the...
Get Wallach on the phone.
The lay of the land a little
Wallach
bit.
Wallach Legal, Michael McCann, Bob McGovern, get all the lawyers on the phone.
But that last part, may not be over yet, indicates that there's a thought there by Edelman's people that they may want to continue on. And you know what I would say to them? Stop it.
Don't. Please don't.
Stop it.
No offense, Bob McGovern. I love you, buddy, but we don't need to do this again.
Take your 4 games. And you know what? I think ultimately he does. I don't think we're going to see another appeal. I think, you know what I think this is? Do you know what I really think he's trying to set up? And we'll see if we get it.
Let's hear it.
He's trying to set up. Remember the Tom Brady moment when he decided, that's it. My fight is over.
Yeah, no Supreme Court.
No, we're not going to continue this. Mm-hmm. I've had enough. I've given it my shot, my best shot. He wants a moment like that. I mean, we know how much Julian Edelman wants to be like Tom Brady or wants to be Tom Brady himself. He wants to have this moment where he said, you know, we considered it. But the fight ends here.
Right.
Right.
He wants his big high road moment.
Yeah. I mean, they've done a great job of creating the doubt and planting that seed in people's minds that he did nothing wrong, he didn't test positive, that they mishandled samples, that there were technicalities that were not followed. And he then wants to have the moment where he says, it was considered, but this is where it fights. I am accepting the NFL's 4-game ban. And the same people that they created doubt with, all the lemmings out there that are like, oh, he's innocent, he didn't do anything, right? Those people will be like, yes, do it, yeah, that's good. And then they'll sit there and talk about how great it will be that he gets a month of rest.
Yeah, right.
That's what the next step will be.
The month of rest will be fine, but yeah, there's one big difference, obviously, Beetle, and that's the fact that we don't have Julian Edelman did PED exhaustion like we did from Deflategate. Like, people were just up to here
and
with this
way,
and just end it. I don't care. Just whatever it is, just end it.
I laugh at these things because... nobody cares if you're on PEDs in the NFL. I don't blame him one bit.
No.
If he needed this in his recovery and he thought it was going to help him get back and be the same player, good for you.
Yeah.
I applaud you. That means you're going the extra mile. That means you're doing everything you could possibly do on this earth to make you get back out there and be the same guy. My greatest fear about this is that the players who resort to that typically feel like they can't get back to who they were before the injury.
Right.
My fear is he won't be the same player on the other side of this four-game ban. But if you think I'm going to get upset because the guy tested positive for PEDs, you got to look elsewhere. Because I think, for in a lot of these cases, it's a good thing. Good for you. Trying to get yourself back to where you were.
And I agree with that, too. But by the same token, if everyone's doing it, then why'd you have to go over the speed limit, I guess?
Why didn't you take your masking agent, is my
why didn't you
question.
Do something along those
why
lines,
you
know?
Why did you not take a masking agent?
Very strange. Very strange.
I'm upset that he got caught.
Yeah.
I'm not upset that he took the PEDs. I'm upset that he got caught on the PEDs.
Got reckless.
Because there are definitely ways to game that system in the NFL as well. There are. In terms of testing dates and when they're going to be able to test you, there's definite ways around all of that. I'm upset that he was caught, not that he did the PEDs. Nobody's mad that he did PEDs. It's the NFL. You think guys can go through that, 16 regular season games of that, and not take a little something? Everyone's got a little something.
One person's upset.
Everybody.
You know who's upset?
Who?
Alex Guerrero. He was very disappointed. You know, Alex does everything the right way. He does it legally and up in the up and up. And Julian, if you did this, I am very disappointed in you, son.
Clean living, man. Clean living.
The one guy.
617-779-0985. You got any thoughts on Edelman having his suspension upheld? I welcome those. Also, big news this week, LeBron is going to the Lakers. LeBron to L.A. Yuck.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
There is other news, big news, out in Los Angeles, and Zubin Mehenta has a tough day back in the studios in
Matt,
Bristol.
Thank you. It's breaking news. Judge just hit a home run you described, and apparently, Woj, the Lakers have hit a home run themselves. Tell us about this.
LeBron James, 4 years, $154 million to join the Los Angeles Lakers, a seismic shift in the NBA. And now the Lakers start to try to build a contender in the West that can go at the Golden State Warriors and Houston Rockets.
Complete coverage in moments on ESPN News. What will the Lakers do next? LeBron's in the fold. Matt, back to you.
Zubin, thanks. Big news indeed. Dini Gregorius to right and over Mookie Betts. To third, and here come the Yankees in the bottom of the first inning tonight.
Oh, how badly did ESPN want to ditch that baseball game? It goes to straight LeBron coverage. Tough night for that to happen to ESPN. Tough night.
It's a tough night all around. Tough night for David Price. Tough night for everybody.
Oh, we'll get to him. We'll get to him. My first day in this week is today, so I got to catch up on all this.
Oh, yeah. You missed a lot.
I did. It's crazy. LeBron James chooses the Lakers on Sunday night. Gross. I mean, it seemed for more than a year to be the already determined landing spot for LeBron. Like, this was predetermined by him. He was going there. It was his decision to go there. Yet, for some reason, it happened on Sunday night. And it still sort of caught me off guard because the way it happened without any fanfare, without the pomp and circumstance and the tour and
right.
the, you know, talking to everybody.
Not even a letter to Sports Illustrated.
Nothing had leaked out.
Yeah.
Nothing got out there. And all of a sudden he was picking the Lakers. And it caught me off guard a little bit because even though we had known for over a year that this seemed to be where LeBron was going to go, the Lakers stink. That's why it, to a degree, caught me off guard. Because for months, if not years now, I have believed, and I think now wrongfully, I have believed that LeBron was motivated by winning, motivated by building his legacy, motivated by chasing Jordan 6 rings. Mm. And as we sit here today, today is July the 5th, 2018. How can you say any of that is true right now?
It's nearly impossible.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
Granted, offseason isn't over yet.
True.
So something could still be in the works. Lakers could pull off a big trade. They could acquire Kawhi Leonard in the coming days. Any of that could happen, and we can change this. But as it stands right now, if that doesn't happen, what a horrible choice for LeBron James.
Yeah, basketball-wise, definitely. There was a lot of better choices he could have made. And from what I understand, Beadle, I don't know. I mean, if he unless it was kept completely under wraps by both sides. There was no meeting with the Celtics. There was no meeting, I don't think, with anybody else. Did he actually ever really meet with the Philadelphia 76ers? Did that actually happen?
There may have been a phone call, but there was nothing more than that.
There was no real opportunity for any of that. It seemed like, you know, Stephen A. Smith had that, and no one else did, and then there was no details about it ever. So I don't know if there was ever really even a process here.
It doesn't
I'm going to Los Angeles, and that's that. Goodbye, and here I go.
He's going into his 16th year in the NBA. He will turn 34 this year. Jordan won his sixth ring just after turning 35, and then he retired for 3 years. And
right.
Let's be honest, that was his retirement. It was over at that point. Does LeBron have seasons at this point to waste and punt on at this point in his career? Does he have that luxury right now? I don't think so. Not if you're all about the winning and all about the legacy and all about the lasting image and trying to catch Jordan and trying to be considered the greatest of all time. You know, there have been other all-time greats that have gone to the Lakers mid-career, right? This has happened before. Wilt did it. Kareem did it. Those guys were trades, obviously.
Right.
Shaq was a free agent when he did it at 24 years old, still in his prime. Here's the difference between LeBron and all those guys. Those guys needed the Lakers. Those guys went there because they wanted to win.
Mm.
LeBron has three rings. He's chasing now more. He doesn't need the Lakers, per se. He just likes the Lakers. That's a huge difference. Why'd you go to L.A.? Well, I like the L.A. lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because I like Rodeo Drive. Because I want the bright lights. Because what? I want Jack sitting courtside for my playoff games? What is it? Because you can't go there. Maybe it's because his son is going to go to high school there next year.
Or this media company that he's launching, too.
Or he wants to sell more shoes. Or the media company. Or any of this stuff. Listen, he has the right to choose it for that. I'm not saying he doesn't have the right to do that. He could choose the Lakers for whatever reason it is, even if it's just he wants to wear a Lakers uniform. He wants to be playing for the same team that all those other great players had played for. But I think he's about to take a pass on enhancing and improving his NBA resume and his lasting image as an NBA player. He might make himself filthy rich by starting his media company there. He might make his family happy because his son is going to go to high school there. He might like it because the shopping is great and the celebrity lifestyle is great or whatever it might be. Choose it for whatever you want. Just don't tell me you chose it for winning reasons.
Yeah, you know, and it makes all the sense in the world from that perspective. People as famous as LeBron James should live in Beverly Hills. Like, that's where you're supposed to go live. You're not supposed to live in Sudbury or wherever the Celtics all live. Like, guys at LeBron James's level of fame, they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be in Beverly Hills, and they're supposed to be, you know, hobnobbing with all these other celebrities. Fine. But for him to take a bridge year like this, you know, and even with the bridge year, let's say he gets Jimmy Butler in or some other player. And Cousins obviously isn't going there, but, you know, Butler or some other big player, some guy we haven't thought about who gets traded over there and makes the team a little bit better. Even with that, LeBron might not see another NBA Finals, let alone win one. And you want to, like, go to L.A. and consider yourself one of the great Lakers? All those great Lakers won championships. You might not even get to one. And that's a fact. He might not see an NBA Finals.
Yes. I'm stunned, by the way, by the four-year deal. I know it's 3-1, but that commitment, Hardy had asked me last week, he said, do you think that where LeBron goes this offseason will be his last stop? And I said, no, I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be his last stop.
Hmm.
Based on that deal, I'm rethinking that. Maybe this is just where he wants to be.
Could be.
And that's why this has been out there for over a year. And there wasn't a real consideration about what gives me the best opportunity to win. It's about where do I want to go? I want to go to the Lakers. That's fine. Do what you want. He's filthy rich. He's got three rings. He's a great player. But if you are truly driven by the resume, the legacy, all that, you're not choosing the Lakers, and he would not have chosen the Lakers. So I've got to say, I'm wrong. I gave him too much credit as a basketball player.
Yeah.
I did. I gave him too much.
But aren't we also, isn't this sort of a no-win situation for him? He could have done the Kevin Durant thing and joined the Rockets, right? Like, that was probably the best basketball move for him if he wanted to really contend with Golden State. Join the Rockets.
But here's
they almost beat him.
But here's the thing that would have benefited him in this. No matter where he went, he probably wasn't going to be the favorite. Golden State was going to be the favorite.
Houston with LeBron. They keep everybody, keep Capella, keep
okay.
Chris Paul.
They might be equals.
Equals,
but,
sure.
But I don't think he's going to surpass anybody.
Well, he's definitely not surpassing him with Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma.
Oh, hell no. Not even coming close.
Yeah.
No, but he had the benefit in this decision. He had the benefit of the Warriors being there, and the Warriors still, no matter what he chose, being the premier team and the team to beat. That's a unique situation. when you've got a team that's that good. You know what else is unique? The Warriors winning eight of the last nine finals games against LeBron, the best player in the world. So that beatdown, if he goes elsewhere, I don't know that you all of a sudden would surpass the Warriors as a favorite. In fact, I don't think you would. All right, so we got this on the table. LeBron to the Lakers, 617-779-0985. A couple other basketball points I'd like to get to, including the Celtics rookie missing his flight and the Warriors getting Boogie Cousins. The rich get richer. That and your calls next.
Miss something?
So what happens now?
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Like I said in the press conference, it's just a blessing. Learning from my teammates and my coaches, just soaking up everything.
What happened the other day on Sunday?
I went home to get a couple of things, and just a missed flight, miscommunication by me. It's all on me. So just looking to push forward and move past that.
What did the coaches kind of talk to you about after that?
Just accountability, which they expressed to me a lot when I first got here. Just accountability and just stressing that this is a job. You know, things are different in college. So just knowing what you have and the opportunities are limited.
Have they talked to you about any discipline?
Definitely. They discipline you for words more than you may know. But maybe a couple extra sprints or something like that. I don't know.
Robert Williams, the 20-year-old Celtics rookie, missed his flight, was here last Friday, went home after the press conference on Friday when he needed to be back here on Sunday. He says he went home as if, you know, like you or I go drive home because
right.
We forgot something at home when we go to work.
Pick up my laundry.
Like, you know, a 20-minute ride somewhere. No, he flew back home and then missed his return flight to the Celtics. This after the snafu with the what time the conference call was at,
right.
The day after he got drafted.
The old time zone conundrum.
You think this guy's making a good first impression?
I would say no,
with
he's
his
not.
New employer.
He definitely isn't. And not only that, Beetle, you'll remember, I mean, every single team that worked this guy out and interviewed him and sat down with him passed on him. Like that's the truth. The Celtics never worked him out. I don't think they ever had him in for anything. And they saw him, you know, sort of floating there at 27 and they grabbed him. And this is exactly why guys like that fall that far.
Do you know what he's looking for? Let me tell you something. You know what? Let's see. January, average high, 31 degrees. February, average high, 34 degrees. Do you know where I'm talking about? Do you know what locale I'm talking about? That would be Portland, Maine.
Okay.
In the months of... I hope he likes the cold weather.
Going to be chilly up
in,
there.
In January and February, because that's what he's basically like looking at if he keeps it up. What are you doing? Listen, I get that there might be some maturity issues when you're dealing with a 20-year-old. I get it. But how hard is that to just be somewhere? Why? First, I don't understand why you went home to Louisiana after being here Friday and needing to be here Sunday.
Yeah, how about you have someone ship it? You got money now.
What are you doing?
It's called FedEx. What? Just put it in a box.
How about you plan, hey, I got to be there for the start of the practices on Sunday. I got to be there on Friday. Okay, I got to plan to go there on Friday and stay there. Why are you flying home and flying back? What are you doing?
That's a curious one right there. Unless there was someone he really needed to see, you know, he had a girlfriend he had to say goodbye to,
Listen, play it again, Tom. What, you go home, pick up a couple items. You know, like, I didn't have everything in my duffel bag.
I went home to get a couple of things. And
get a couple of things.
Miscommunication by me is all on me.
No, not miscommunication. What does that mean? No, you missed your flight.
Left my Xbox.
No, you were not a responsible person. You did not get back to the airport to get on the plane that was taking you back to Boston. Why were you going home in the first place? What the hell was going on there that was so necessary for you to leave Boston Friday, go back to Louisiana when you needed to be back here, what, Sunday morning? What are you doing?
I went home to get a couple of things.
Yeah, it's foolish. Foolish. And then it's even more foolish that you did that on a tight schedule and then missed your flight.
One last big party at Buffalo Wild Wings. One last big blowout at BBW. That's what it was. It's like, come on, man, we're all here. We need you.
I think you're. We're,
Come on, Bob. One last one.
He dropped. he dropped like a stone in the first round. I didn't expect that we would see why so soon. I didn't expect that we would have two incidents with the rookie in the first week of being a Celtic. First 10 days of being a Celtic, you've got two issues that you've already had. And he said he talked to Brad Stevens, and Brad Stevens explained to him, you know, this is an opportunity. I don't think there's a lot of minutes for this kid to begin with, but if this keeps happening, you'll see him go play for the main Red Claws. Go develop yourself with the Red Claws.
Yeah.
Enjoy Portland. It's beautiful in January.
And just hope Daniel Tice gets injured at some point and you get a cup of coffee up at because that's really, I mean, that's who he's competing with, right? Isn't it him and Daniel Tice?
Yes.
Like, you're a lottery talent rookie here. You should be able to, I don't know, I mean, I like Daniel Tice, but you should
Not
be able
that,
to compete with him.
A talent for that is really sort of one-dimensional and needs to develop the other talents on the offensive end.
Mm.
So go develop yourself, because we are not dealing with this. You have an opportunity. You fell big time. Every team, as you said, worked him out. None of them wanted him. They met him, they worked him out, and they decided, yeah, we'll take a hard pass on this guy. And the Celtics are already dealing with his issues in the first 2 weeks.
The Clippers worked him out twice, and they had back-to-back picks in the middle of the round.
Took a hard pass twice.
Both times. Said no thanks.
The super team that is the Warriors got Boogie Cousins. Where are the Celtics on this? Is that an unfair question?
Sounds like they were the backup plan.
How about you don't be the backup plan?
Mm.
Do you fault them for not? I do. And here's why. I have my reservations about this particular player.
Okay.
And the baggage, right? The guy that, you know, is super talented but needs his head screwed on straight at times and probably needs someone who's going to, you know, sort of be a mentor or give him the kick in the ass he needs or something. I don't know what it is. I get that. But at this short-term bargain type of situation. And so let's assume maybe the money was more than what the Warriors got him at. You couldn't even do it on a one-year deal? You couldn't absorb that for one year? And by the way, if it doesn't work, see you later.
That's it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I get it. If you were someone who'd said, you know, I don't want this player, I don't want to deal with this player, I get that. I understand that. But this is not a long-term commitment, and it's not even huge money. That, to me, makes the chance and roll of the dice worth it. You give up nothing but money, and you bring him in, and it's short-term, and he's motivated.
Yeah.
And he's not even playing for part of the season. He's rehabbing.
Get him in January, February, around then?
It's not as if you have to deal with him for a long time.
Yeah. Now,
I think the Celtics deserve criticism for not being more involved in that.
Now, Cousins made $18 million last year, first of all. And if you read Mark Spears' thing about it, it was a warm day in the desert and he stood out on the balcony and it was 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which was all very important details there in the Mark Spears piece that I liked. But he also said that, you know, after LeBron signed, it wasn't even a full day. It was 8 hours after LeBron signed with L.A. He didn't get any offers. And so he decided to start calling around and saying, hey, I'm available for the mid-level exception. The Warriors didn't know that he would be. The Celtics certainly didn't know. I think he called the Warriors first, told them, yeah, I'll do it at mid-level if you can, you know, make it work. Let's do it. And then maybe the Celtics were called after that as sort of a backup plan, but there was no offers there for the full 17-18.
But if you were called as the backup plan, you could have offered him more than the mid-level.
I think they did. I think they did go over that. I think they went up to like $8 million. That's sort of the rumor that I heard. They went up to like $8 million, which I think is reasonable for a guy like him who's only going to play part of the year, 1 year deal.
What if you were 1 year, $10 million?
Mm. I mean, listen, that's twice what you're paying Aaron Baines. You know, he's signing with the Warriors for Aaron Baines money.
It makes me sick. Not because I'm worried about the super. Listen, they already were the super team. Okay, they were already the team to beat. They are already the likely champion. But I'm more upset about the fact that the Celtics weren't more involved in this. How do you not land that guy? There's a short-term commitment there. If he's a problem, you say goodbye. You part ways. John is in the car. Hey, John.
How's it going, boys?
Hey.
Hey, John.
Welcome back. I don't really understand the concept that LeBron making a decision that clearly is better for, you know, like his personal and family life and, you know, winning are mutually exclusive. I just think it's unrealistic to expect that LeBron's going to go into L.A., with the Lakers are being a huge draw to players as it is, and then you add him, who's the biggest draw in the NBA for any other player, he's always had this sort of me and two other guys and then a bunch of mid-level veterans who are great in their day past their prime thing. And that was happening in Cleveland and Miami, so you don't think it's going to happen in the Lakers?
Well, like, John, I'm starting to question whether or not he's still the same draw.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, look at this offseason. He couldn't get anyone else. Any of the free agents didn't seem all that interested in going there, including a guy that has been rumored to want to go there forever.
Yeah. That was a big surprise.
And when you talk about Paul George, you know, he even has said, quote, "I wanted to become a Laker prior to my trade to Oklahoma City. Yeah, I used to want to be a Laker. Now I don't want to be a Laker anymore." Guy who's from California that forever had wanted to be a Laker. And now his buddy LeBron goes there, and it's not a draw. That wasn't a draw for him. That wasn't enough for him to change his mind and say, I will leave Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City and Westbrook were a bigger draw for Paul George than LeBron in L.A. And based on the way that LeBron's decision here went down, you're telling me he wasn't telling other players for some time that he was going to the Lakers? You're telling me that there was no communication between him and Paul George leading up to this? He probably told the guy, mm-hmm. I'm going to L.A. Are you coming? And I think that all of a sudden, LeBron, with players knowing that the prime, he's at the end of the prime here. I don't know if he's the same draw anymore. I think his power to draw other players in may be fading. That might be over for him.
It may be. And the proof is in the pudding right now. You mentioned Paul George. Chris Paul showed no intention of wanting to leave Houston.
And that's his guy. That's the godfather to his son.
Yeah. The other bookend of the banana boat ride, Chris Paul. And Kyrie Irving couldn't have gotten out of there fast enough.
I forgot about that.
Seriously, I mean, these are all guys who could have stayed playing with him. Kyrie wanted out of there. Chris Paul did not want to leave Houston. He thought, you know what, I could go to L.A. with LeBron. I could stay here in Houston. If we didn't miss 23 pointers in a row and if I didn't get hurt, then we probably would have been in the finals last year against LeBron and we would have beat him.